Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Podcast One presents The Doctor and Mrs. Guinea Pig Show with Heather and Terry Dubrow. Does it work or is it a crock? No worries. Dr. and Mrs. Guinea Pig are on the case.
This is Dr. and Mrs. Guinea Pig. I'm Heather Dubrow.
And I'm Dr. Terry Dubrow.
Welcome back, everybody.
Hello.
Yeah, I like being in the studio. It's nicer than doing it at home, I think.
Well, it's nicer because the restaurants in L.A. are so good.
There's definitely that.
That's the main reason.
Yeah. Although after what we ate last weekend in the desert, I think we're good.
I have been eating incessantly one meal a day. But when I do eat that meal, it's so high calorie.
Yeah, but that's why interval eating works so well.
It does, because I'm really not as fat as I should be. I should be much heavier.
Keeps you in check.
But
are you going to try to shred out before we go to France?
Yes, and on Botched, Paul and I are going to go have a DEXA scan, which is a device that measures your body fat really accurately. And so they've been wanting to, because Paul had one. And he has Dr. Hertzinger, that guy who was on Extreme Makeover.
Yeah, we had dinner with him.
Yes.
Wait, didn't we have dinner with him with Richard? Yeah.
Yes.
He's a very nice guy.
So,
Rob.
Right. And so Paul came to the show with his analysis of his body fat. And he was shocked by how high it was. So he had mentioned it on the show that he and I should do it. So I said to the producers off camera, I said, so listen, if we're going to do that, I need like 3 weeks notice. And they said, okay, we'll give you 4 weeks. I go, yeah, I want 4 weeks notice so that if I do it, I can be not fat. And Paul will be really fat in comparison.
So when is it?
So he says, I'll give you 4 weeks notice. So until then, I'm going
to
eat.
Oh, so you don't have to notice. I thought you were going to tell me you had a date.
Well, it's going to happen in the next, I think, 2 months. So I just said, yeah, give me 3 weeks. In 2 weeks, I can really get down to a weight that's not totally embarrassing. Because you know what will happen. We'll take off our shirts. We'll get in the DEXA scan. Because the DEXA scan is one – there's like 4 or 5 different ways to measure your body fat. And as you know, there's 2 different kinds of body fat. There's somatic fat, which is that, you know, regular fat that you can see. And then there's visceral fat on the inside.
That's around your organs.
Yeah. And that's the dangerous fat. And so what the DEXA scan does is it actually – determines not only lean muscle mass and all those other things, but it tells you exactly how much visceral fat very accurately versus how much body fat you have. And so Paul's body fat was like, I mean, and he's kind of thin right now. It was like 27%.
You told me this. Was it that high? I thought you said it was like 19.
No.
No, it was
no.
higher?
No, we did a scene last year where we had like this device that you bought me for Father's Day. Mm-hmm. And it said, you know, 19, and I was 17, and I was like ripped at the time, so it probably wasn't very accurate. So we're going to do this super accurate thing, and I want to make sure I'm not embarrassingly fat. So, you know.
You're cheating.
Well,
you're like Lori Loughlin.
How's this
you're
cheating?
You're like the cheater.
How's this cheating?
Because you're prepping.
Well,
you're like taking pictures.
That's like saying
with the crewing guy.
No. That's like saying cheating is studying for the exam. I'm studying for the exam. You know, we got the exam coming up, and I'm going to make sure I'm skinny. But you know, I'm not going to embarrass myself. It's more fun when Paul is fat, and I'm not.
For you, maybe.
Yeah. So you know. So there's that. But right now, I'm in a weird phase right now where I'm doing the interval eating, the Dubrow diet, really well, except I'm eating a great dinner, but then I do the pantry thing. I'm doing a double dose of the pantry thing right now. And you're so controlled and so disciplined. Not only are you eating perfectly, you're not doing the pantry thing at all.
I have shades of pantry. So because I went off the rails a little bit, in a mindful way, I have to say. Like, it was Easter, and there's Easter candy around. And I actually loved what you did. So the kids had all their Easter candy.
Right.
And you saw what they didn't want or what they when they were done. And you went, okay, can I have this and this? And they said, yeah. And you put it aside.
Right.
And you said, I'm going to have this after dinner.
Right.
I like that. It's like for me on Halloween, sometimes I remember for years when it was a lot of trick or treating and, you know, candy around our house and everything, I would say, I'm not eating candy. And then, of course, we'd go trick-or-treating, we'd bring roadies with us, and this and that. And by the time we got home, the only thing left was, like, some gross thing that I hated, like Whoppers.
And we'd eat them.
And I'd eat it anyway, because it was there. So then I finally got smart a few years ago, and I would take the candy that I wanted and put it aside and say, okay, I'm going to have this later. So I loved that you did that. I thought that was a really good way to say, I'm willing to eat this. This is what I'm going to enjoy. So I'm going to put this aside and save it for later.
Right. But then we came back home and I got back on my routine.
Well, not really. Actually, we came back home and went out to dinner. Did you see what I posted? We were supposed to stop eating. Oopsie.
Yeah, but you ate like fish eggs.
Well, I had caviar, salad. I had a rack of lamb.
Yeah, but what's wrong with all that?
I had veggies. It was good.
Yeah,
I loved
it. That was a perfect balanced diet.
And I had a couple of biscotti cookies.
Yeah. And I, so, you know, I eat the perfect dinner, which is like this nice salad and then these veggies and some protein, and it's perfect. And if I should be done and I should go upstairs and brush my teeth and floss and take a Choco Core to block my cholesterol. But
and
instead,
wear a Capillus cap. I saw a commercial for the Capillus cap today.
By the way, a friend of mine who's like the best hair transplant doctor in the world, named James Harris in Colorado, sent me an email. You want to hear this?
Yes.
Okay. He said, listen to this. I was shocked. So we've turned you on to the Capillus cap, right, to hair grow, laser hair growth. He said this to me because he heard us talking about it. He said, oh, this was from Theradome, that other company that has that laser that you...
Didn't we do that one too?
We have it.
Yeah.
That you wear like twice a week for 30 minutes?
20 minutes,
twice a week. But the Capillus cap has more lasers, right?
6 minutes.
Yeah, 6 minutes a day, but many more lasers, much more effective.
And are you supposed to use it every day?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, dear Dr. Harris, so the Theradome Pro LH80... which I don't know if we have that one, but I think we have that one.
It's about $200, I think.
Yeah, uses a proprietary laser design that differentiates it from all other laser phototherapy devices. We have done benchmark testing of both the Capillus 82 and 272, which we have the 272, the expensive one, which show significant shortfalls in their technology and design. We are approximately 15 times stronger than the Capillus 82 and 5 times stronger than the 272, the one we have. These caps are assembled in the U.S. using foreign-made laser diodes that output less than 5 milliwatts. They do not provide continuous laser energy. They utilize a wavelength of 650, ours 678, results in 2.5 times the penetration, and that their cap, Capillus design, results in excessive heat being caught between the cap and scalp. Haven't you been noticing that?
Yeah, what's
and
the name of the one you like? Theradome what?
Theradome Pro LH80. I think that's the one we have.
I'm looking it up
right
now.
So we're immediately switching to that one. Because haven't you noticed heat on the Capillus?
Yes.
We've been commenting about
that. Are you sure we... Oh, no. This one's $900. We don't have this one.
Oh, we need to get that one.
By the way, I'm buying it right now on Amazon. Yeah. And if you go to amazon.com/shop/HeatherDubrow, you know what's so great about that? You pay the normal price, but you get to keep our podcast for free. So go do that. This one, it's the Theradome...
Pro LH80.
Pro LH80. It is $895.
That's not the one we have?
No.
You sure?
We did not spend $800.
How do you know? That guy gave it to us. He sent it to
us for
free.
It wasn't the LH80 Pro.
Are you sure?
I'm going to go look.
Before you order it, let's check.
Well, I ordered it and I can always cancel it.
Okay. You can cancel it tonight by the time we get home?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so we're immediately switching to that one. Not that you have hair growth needs.
I do. My hair is getting thinner. It sucks.
By the way, thinner. If it got thinner, you'd be a gorilla instead of just a monkey.
Okay.
You have the thickest hair in the world.
No, I don't.
Your hair is ridiculous.
You don't understand women. We use product and fluff and.
Yeah, but you still have great hair. But you know, 70% of women over the age of 50 have significant hair loss.
I just love that we're talking about hair loss because it's one of those things that people are so embarrassed to talk about. By the way, 15 years ago, you wouldn't have talked about it.
No. But I wouldn't have talked about, you know, doing Botox fillers or...
No, it's true. Why do you think you're okay talking about it now?
I think it's become okay to talk about
things. So it's societal.
Yeah.
It's not you, like, being more secure.
Well, you and I have talked about this before. So in the 70s, for example, admitting to any plastic surgery was a no-no. In the late 80s, occasionally people would admit to a breast augmentation, mm-hmm. and that would be okay. In the 90s, breast augmentation was okay. Everyone admits that, but no one would admit to liposuction, ever. 2000s and 2010, you could admit to breast aug, you could admit to lipo, you could admit to Botox, but you can't admit to fat transfer in the buttock. And still to this day, nobody's willing to admit to fat transfer in the buttock.
Really?
So there's a comfort level behind what people are willing to admit to. And so even if it changes their looks dramatically, for a long time, nobody would admit to a nose job, right? So, and yet yeah, people say, yeah, I had a bump take off my nose. Now, who gives a shit? Paul had a facelift, and he came out on Botched and talked about it. A facelift for a man. How vain is that? Like anything else, people get more comfortable talking about it.
I suppose so. But I still think it's good we talk about it, because I still think a lot of people don't talk about hair loss, and especially women. It's such a weird thing for women.
Women don't talk about it? I think men are much more uncomfortable
about it. I'm telling you, none of my friends talk about it.
Really?
No. And you've heard me tell this story before, but a couple of years ago, I was at a luncheon with this group, and this woman was there who's very nice, very attractive, very wealthy. And I'm only pointing out that she's wealthy is because she has resources.
Right.
And her hair was just like a mess. It looked terrible. It was all ratty and weird and poofy in the back and just odd. And I was talking to a friend of mine, close friend, and I was like, what's going on with so-and-so's hair? And she's like, ugh. She goes, I think she's really thinning over there.
Yeah.
And so she's trying to cover it. Yeah. I can't say anything. And I was like, ugh. And I thought, what a bummer. I wish I could, you know, tell her what I know about the Theradome or the Capillus or
Minoxidil.
Or Minoxidil for women or our beauty caps, our new beauty caps.
New beauty caps.
By the way, have we even talked about the new beauty caps?
Yeah, let's spend 2 seconds talking about that. So we have a hair, skin, nail caps called Consult Beauty Caps.
What have we sold? 140,000
something crazy.
Units? Yeah.
So it had the highest concentration of biotin, which is a vitamin that directly targets the hair cell. And it had like the highest concentration of the market, 8,000 micrograms. And so recent science has shown that if you actually up it even beyond that, it even does 1,000 times better.
So your body can absorb it.
Yeah. Well, the way we do, we have this in a fine powder. So we came out with this last visit, Evine, with a new formulation called Beauty Cap Pros. And it has 10,500 micrograms, by far and away the highest on the market. And if you want to supplement your hair and your skin and nails, this Beauty Cap Pro at Evine is the ultimate. American made. We sold the heck out of it because people get it. You have to supply your hair, skin, nails as much as you possibly can. So that was good.
And what's up with the blood orange?
So there's a product in it called Red Orange Complex, which is from these three kinds of blood oranges that are in Italy that actually are located on a mountaintop near this volcano just outside of Sicily. And if you harness in the right concentration this ingredient from those blood oranges, it actually can limit pigmentation on your skin. And so
pretty cool to be able to do that from the inside, huh?
Yeah. So that's what the Beauty Cap Pros have, those two, among not to mention all the others.
So like age spots and melasma.
All of that. And it can limit your when I lay out this stage of my life, when I lay out in the sun, I get dark spots.
Yeah.
Or my dark spots get darker. This will limit photosensitivity and the melanocytes' reaction to photosensitivity.
By the way, it's a B.
It's a B?
Yes.
Where is it?
Right there on the glass.
Want me to get it?
Yes.
Where is it?
Crawling up.
By the way, it was a B.
It was. I know.
No,
I'm very allergic.
Dead
B.
Bye-bye, B.
Bye, B. One of my friends takes bee pollen.
Oh, okay.
She said she started taking it to help her stop hating the world so much.
Oh.
But so it must have some kind of Rancho Relaxo thing to it, bee pollen?
Maybe.
But she said what it's done for her, which seems very counterintuitive to me, is that it's cut her appetite completely.
Hmm.
Now she's very thin. She was always thin, but now she's very thin.
Appetite suppressant, bee pollen.
Yeah, have you ever heard of that?
Yeah, placebo. Yeah, BS. You know what the hottest thing, obviously, in the forefront, the frontier,
The Dubrow diet, the Dubrow Fusion diet products that are coming in?
That and CBD products. Those are the two hottest things for sure.
Yep.
Because, you know, CBD receptors. But the Dubrow Keto Fusion Diet, but we're calling it the Dubrow Fusion Diet, right?
The new book is the Dubrow Keto Fusion Diet because it's fusing our diet with keto. But our new products that are coming out, we decided to call them the Dubrow Fusion Diet because what I'm sort of assuming is if some other new hot diet comes out that we find interesting, that we want to include, that maybe there's a great product that we want to do.
Yeah, but it really does fuse all the advantages of the Dubrow diet and the keto diet and eliminates any of the challenges or disadvantages. Particularly, we've really basically added the keto diet to the Dubrow diet in such a way that it's balanced. It allows you to continue fat burning, get rid of the hunger from the Dubrow diet. And we got rid of the unbalanced, icky sweets and meat, butter and fat and gross.
And added back,
fruits and veggies.
Vegetables.
But using science.
Yeah, because it was really interesting how many people used to message us and say, I love your diet, but I love doing keto.
Yeah.
How do I merge them?
Yeah. No, this is the way to use both. And it's a super powerful way to lose weight. What I like about it is the whole notion that this giant study was done that shows that if you just lose 5 to 10% of your body weight, I think we talked about this last week, right? If you lose 5 to 10% of your body weight, even if you're 80 pounds overweight, 60 pounds, 20 pounds, that it has such a radically dramatic effect on your health in terms of cancer risk, cardiac disease risk, diabetes risk, all of those things, that it's worth losing. So the Dubrow Keto Fusion Diet, what it does is it's, it allows you to combine both things. But it isn't just for people who want to look really good, who want to lose a ton of weight. It's for people who need to shave off some pounds very quickly just to maximize their health status. So if you're 80 and you're not interested in being in a bikini and don't need to be skinny, you do need to take 5 to 10% of your body weight off so you can live longer. So that's really what we're focusing, both the cosmetic and the functional.
I love that too. But one of the things I love about it, even functionally cosmetic, is that I think sometimes people look at the macro view of how much they need to lose, and it's so daunting they don't even try. But when you think about what you're saying, 5 to 10% of your body, I mean, that's nothing.
Well,
how much easier that is to do and how much you're improving your life, that I my hope is they'll continue.
I think your point is perfect in that I'm the type of person, I think a lot of people are, I'm all or nothing.
Yes.
So if I'm not going to lose all the body fat,
I'm
not going to bother. But then when you realize it's not about losing all the body fat and trying to have six-pack abs, it's about getting 5 to 10% off very quickly and really feeling amazing, but more importantly, your body, in terms of the visceral fat that we're talking about, is so much healthier and under so much stress. They were talking about if you're type 2 diabetes, maybe taking less metformin. We're talking about your cholesterol is going to go down.
Maybe get off that statin.
Totally.
So when you lose weight, does the visceral fat come off first or the outside? What's the other word?
Somatic. Body fat.
Body fat.
Yeah. But you can call visceral fat body fat too.
Is it the organ fat or the body fat? What comes off first?
I think it depends. Certainly if you've had liposuction, the visceral fat comes off first.
Is that
right?
You
sucked out the body fat.
Oh, in certain areas.
But I think the first sort of 5 to 10% is mainly visceral fat, which is the really dangerous fat. So that's why this diet is so critical. And we'll, as we get closer to having our products out, we'll talk about what's called nutritional ketosis, which is a different kind of level of ketosis than the ketosis you get with the ketogenic diet, which is a much higher, tougher, non-sustainable type of ketosis.
Well, it's very exciting. You know what else is really exciting? We have a guest today.
Oh, I'm so excited.
And this is going to be fun. He's flown in from the East Coast, Dr. Justin Bazan, and we're going to talk about eyes, eye health. I want to hear about laser procedures. We have macular degeneration in my family. I want to talk about all that stuff. So I can't wait to hear what he has to say.
Is it time to bring him
in? It's time to bring him in.
This is Dr. and Mrs. Guinea Pig.
Caldrea hand care products are unbelievable luxurious fragrances, hand soap and hand lotion. You guys, if you have not heard of Caldrea, it's a consciously crafted home and body care brand that combines thoughtful ingredients with delectable scents, making caring for ourselves and our homes a beautiful experience. Caldrea's line of hand care products includes both hand soaps and moisturizing lotions that are incredibly effective. Their products use a combination of essential oils from flowers and herbs and other thoughtfully chosen ingredients. So they clean really effectively while allowing you to enjoy their luxurious fragrances. I have to say the ginger pomelo is my absolute favorite. It's not too heavy, but it just smells so beautiful. It reminds me of like being out in a field and or getting a massage. It's just unbelievably luxurious. The hand soaps and the lotions, oh my gosh, they feel amazing. It's almost like being at the spa and then you realize, oh my gosh, I'm actually washing my hands, moisturizing my hands, washing my dishes, spraying my countertops. I mean, the products go on and on and on and they are amazing. So if you want free shipping on an order of $50 or more, you can go to caldrea.com. That's Caldrea.com. Visit caldrea.com and add wonder to your washing.
Hello.
Shut your pie hole.
Welcome to Big Demi Energy. I'm your host, Demi Burnett, and I'm so excited to have you joining my podcast. Some things you can expect from this podcast are some juicy gossip, some good advice, some fun, exciting guests, and a lot of other surprises. Surprise! Make sure you subscribe to Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Podcast One, wherever you listen to your podcast at.
This is Dr. and Mrs. Guinea Pig.
Please welcome Dr. Justin Bazan.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Thank you so much for being here. So first, give us a little overview. Tell us who you are, where you trained, what you do back in New York, and then we'll dive in because sure. Ocular health is so important. And I think people do not discuss this.
And now. Your favorite New York restaurants after that.
Well, give you a list, but it's always changing, which is great about New York.
I know, right?
My name is Dr. Justin Bazan. I'm an optometrist from Brooklyn. I have a private practice in Brooklyn, but I'm also the medical spokesperson for the Vision Council, which is an organization that represents companies in the ophthalmic industry and the optical industry. And I'm happy to be here to discuss eyeballs because, honestly, what's your most important sense? Right? Oh. You have to think about all your senses. What's your most important sense?
Taste.
No. Really? Without taste, if you think about it.
You eat with your eyes first, though.
That's
no
true.
No question about it. But if you think about it, it is the most specialized organ in the entire body. And it's bizarre if you think about how the heck do you go from a visual image out there, bring it into receptors and get it into your brain and figure it out. It is so incredible.
It blows my mind. Every time I look at the structures of the eye, you know, we have the technology, even since I've been out of school, I graduated in 2004, and the ability to image and understand what's actually happening and sight as a process blows my mind. OCT technology, where we can actually see photoreceptors now, blows my mind. The ability to get wide field imaging of the retina on infants, toddlers, blows my mind. Every day I'm blown away when I go to work and we're able to see exactly what's going on with somebody's visual system.
Yeah, it's such an incredibly specialized field that like someone like me who, you know, I'm trained in general surgery, is board certified in general surgery, then plastic surgery. I don't know squat about the eye.
You had 4 hours in med school.
That's right. I mean, I basically know about rods and cones are more color sensitive.
Well, I know about rods and cones.
I in particular have a million questions that I'd like to ask.
Do you have any? You jump off, dear.
So, first of all, this is sort of a selfish question. Then I want to ask general health questions that I think we all want to know. When I'm, you know, as a plastic surgeon, I'm all about symmetry.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for example, when I do breasts, I sit the patient up and I look at the breast to see if they're symmetrical, if they're even, if the right looks like the left. But I've noticed that if I look at it through my peripheral vision, I'm much better at determining asymmetries, minor asymmetries, than I am if I look directly, which directly is more use the cones, right? And looking sort of at the center part of the chest and then focusing on my peripheral in terms of the outer portion of my visual field really impacts it better.
That's interesting because your macula or your central vision is where you're going to get your best acuity. So outside of the macula and your vision acuity drops off tremendously.
Right. Right?
You can't really pick things off with precise detail. So I'm not quite sure what the process is, but maybe it's the gross symmetry versus the fine details.
I think you're right. I think what it is you don't look – you look more at the macro than the micro.
Yeah.
But what I did learn in med school – and I don't know if this is true because things change. And I went to med school like 200 years ago. But one of the first things we learn is that it doesn't matter how long you stare at a television or at a screen – it doesn't hurt your vision
this
and your eyes.
This is a great question because as a mother of four and having been a child sitting very close to the television, although they don't really sit close to the TV anymore, it's the device,
yeah,
the iPad, the laptop, the phone, and mothers, you know, for generations,
it's the best babysitter.
Move back. You're sitting too close to the TV. So how close is too close and does it matter?
And then the corollary question is going to be, reading in a darker room,
yep,
rather than reading with lights on more, you know, is that bad for eye health?
So a few different parts to that question. First part is it going to cause harm? So is sitting too close to the TV, is holding my device too close to my eyes going to cause harm? There's a difference between strain and physical damage versus developmental damage. And I think all that comes into play, but most typically digital eye strain is how our eyes feel after we're on these devices for more than a few hours. And you guys know how your eyes feel. They feel tired. They feel sore. They may feel dry because we don't blink as much as when we're staring at these screens. So our blink rate drops
right
tremendously. They may get a little red. They may look irritated. You may do this and rub your temples because the muscles that turn your eyes in, your convergence muscles, are just strained because they've been pointing in for hours on end. Your focusing system, your accommodative muscles are going to feel strained. So you're going to get that brow ache up here. You may be at a laptop where you're holding it right here where your neck's going to end up getting strained. So does it cause harm? Absolutely. It's that digital eye strain is the harm that it's causing. Long-term developmental issues? We don't know. We can take the lead from some Asian countries where they ban kids from using any digital devices until age 5, I believe.
Right.
Because they're not sure. They don't know. There was a lot of buzz surrounding blue light. Right? So blue light is UV's cousin. It's high energy visible light. And blue light of certain wavelengths in laboratory settings have been known to damage retinal cells.
Hmm.
And they were porcine eyes. They weren't human eyes, but they were porcine eyes. And the wavelengths of a certain between 415 and 450 nanometers did develop damage on retinal cells
really?
In a laboratory setting.
So you might be aging your eyes by watching.
Well, the output from those devices is on an exponential scale less than the biggest source of blue light, which is
The sun. Yeah.
Right.
We all know we need to protect our eyes from the sun. We do associate UV, but we don't often associate the blue light with it, which is also a viable component of that damage. But your digital device is probably not so much. Now, blue light in the visual system causes more of a strain on our eyes because it causes light scatter. So blue light doesn't always have the same effect on our eyes as other wavelengths, and it does cause some more eye strain in itself.
So my friend's an orthopedic surgeon, and he always says things like, it's hurtful but not harmful.
True.
So is eye strain gives you symptoms that are painful and disturbing but won't actually hurt your eyes, or is there a component where it actually will ultimately hurt your eyes?
So right now the jury's still out, and
okay,
we're still researching. From the digital eye strain perspective, you know, the wearing of computer eyewear or computer glasses can help prevent digital eye strain, which is great because nobody wants to be having to have that sensation at the end of a long day. You don't want to have your eyes also bothering
you. What are computer eyeglasses?
So they usually have some special features. One is that they're going to have a little bump in power. So when you wear contacts or glasses, your eyes are aimed down the street, right?
Right.
So we correct our distance vision. Your focusing system has to grab that focal point from down the street, pull it, and then hold it
right
the whole time you're staring at your digital device.
Hmm.
That's where that extra effort causes strain. So if we had a little bump in the prescription, to aim your eyes on the computer screen, you would alleviate some of that strain.
So it's kind of like reading glasses for your computer.
Correct.
Okay.
So it does help with the focusing system, takes the strain off the focusing system. They also have non-glare lenses, so any kind of reflective glare that can be distracting to the visual system is eliminated. And also the blue light, which can cause some eye strain as well, is also filtered out too.
Okay, so I want to ask you, I'm really, really bad about sunglasses, and I have my entire life.
No, that hurts me.
Yeah. That's such a good question.
And
I'm
you're
the same
California
way.
Dude.
Yeah,
and you're a plastic surgeon.
I don't like wearing sunglasses.
What does the sun do to the skin?
Yeah, it damages the skin, obviously. Actinic damage. Does it do the same thing to the...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So your epithelium layer that you have on your skin is much in the same as in the eye.
Right.
And also the periocular region is more prone to... What is lateral canthal folds...
Right.
Crow's feet.
Yeah, crow's feet, yeah.
Right? So you deal with that all the time. So sunglasses not only protect the internal structures, which we know, macular degeneration, cataract, but also the external structures, too, from skin cancers, basal cells. I'm sure you deal with basal cells all the time.
On the eyeball?
So basal cells around the eye.
Around the eye.
In the eye.
I'm talking about the actual eye. I think he's talking about the actual eyeball, because I'm curious about this, because I also hate wearing sunglasses. And I have a friend who has sunglasses on her kids all the time. And she said it's because their eyes are really light. And she heard that they can discolor.
Yeah, so what they're probably talking about is acquired melanosis or pigmentation. Yeah, just your. I want you to think of your eyes same as your skin. Right? I want you to protect your eyes the same way you protect your skin. You guys are good at lathering up, putting on the sunscreen.
Mm-hmm.
You can't put sunscreen on your eyes. Maybe somebody should invent that little
Do contact lenses help protect?
Contacts do, but they're only covering the cornea.
Mm.
So it's preventing the UV light and blue light from getting to the lens and the macula. But all around the eye is not being protected because contacts don't cover much more than the cornea.
Okay. So basically what you're saying in terms of eye health, every time you're in the sun, you should be wearing sunglasses.
And they don't have to be crazy expensive. These are not Fendi Gucci Prada glasses.
Right.
You can
tell my kids that.
Yeah. So you can find sunglasses for any price point, but just make sure you're getting them from a reputable place. So eye doctors, your large chains that do have sunwear, and make sure it's a reputable brand name. You don't want to be just grabbing something from the street.
Well, because there's another good point is that I remember someone telling me years ago, don't buy inexpensive sunglasses, don't buy inexpensive readers, because if they're mildly warped, it could hurt your vision.
So sunglasses, the big thing we worry about is how much UV protection we have. The tint actually filters out the blue light, right? So if you have dark glasses, it's great. But if they don't have UV protection in it, your pupils are actually going to be dilated behind those sunglasses, and you can get more UV through them.
So you have to have UV lenses.
UV protection. That's why reputable places are important to buy your sunglasses from. You know, I was down Hermosa Beach today, and there's sunglass vendors all along the boardwalk down there. I don't know.
Right.
I want to take that chance?
No.
Probably not.
No, sir.
So, considering how specialized and important the organ is.
Yeah.
Okay, so the next question I have is in terms of aging of the eye, in terms of the vision. I don't mean around the eye. I mean the eye itself. So I'm 27, like three times over. So when I was around 48.
Okay.
Many years ago.
My math is bad. That took me a long time. 27 times 3.
Okay. Yeah.
Wow.
So I was 48. I remember, you know, I'm kind of a high-volume plastic surgeon who does a lot of body work and a lot of facial work and a lot of fine work. And I remember being in a Rite Aid. And Heather was doing some stuff, and I'm hanging out with her. I thought, oh, there's that eyeglass thing, the sort of roly thing, and I start rolling it around, and I go.
Wait, you lost me. The eyeglass.
Oh, you know how you can
means
the readers
where the readers are that.
Oh, gotcha.
On the kiosk thing.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry.
He doesn't go into the store very
gotcha.
Much.
Yeah, I don't. So anyway, I put on like a 1.75.
Wow, that's strong to start.
Well, I was 48.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I put on a 1.75, and I looked at the sort of, because it was a pair of lenses that I, glasses that I thought were cool looking. And they happened to be 1.7, and I looked at this chart.
Is that them?
No, unfortunately. I'm leading to that. And I went, oh my God. And I instantly realized that I wasn't seeing very well anymore.
So what were you doing? There's coping mechanisms. Were you holding stuff further out? Did you need longer arms? Did you need to see your orthopedic friend to get an extension?
I think what I was doing was...
Like you.
I think what I was doing was first of all, we're very high illumination, you know, one of those headlamps, which probably
contrast.
Helps.
Yep. Yeah. Increased contrast.
Yep. And then I think I was just so used to doing
blur it. Blur interpretation is what I like to call it. Blur interpretation skills were refined.
That's exactly right. And then I felt, first of all,
denial was a little bit in there too.
But yes.
A little bit of denial.
I'm
not old enough for reading glasses.
No, by the way, I kind of like wearing glasses.
You do.
Yeah, I do.
Terry always says it's age 43. That's when you turn.
You know what? We're seeing younger and younger now because I think that so what's actually happening is the lens inside your eye, due to oxidation and UV exposure, the proteins are starting to clump up and it loses its ability to flex. So it needs to flex to pull that focal point in. So if you're staring at things up close all day long, even the slightest change to that structure and to those proteins can have an impact on how much eye strain you feel. So I'm starting to see people younger and younger need multifocal glasses, multifocal contacts, reach for readers. Yeah, it used to be 45, then it was 40. Now I'm seeing my 35-year-olds reach for them.
So I got so into it that I thought, oh, okay, 1.75 is like I can see. Mm-hmm. I wasn't even realizing I was see. So then I put on twos and I go, whoa, I can see even better. And then I started getting addicted.
250s.
And now I wear 3.25s.
They don't even make 3.25s. Oh. What do you get?
I get them special.
You get them special made. Really?
3.25s.
Right. Unbelievable. There. They really are.
By the way, they do make three. At those things in Rite Aid, they have a few.
In the U.S., I believe they can't go past 250, but they may not be.
They're there.
You want to see something cool, though? So my friend invented this company called Bunny Eyes. Have you heard of Bunny Eyes yet?
I have not. I'm curious
really
now.
Cool. So they're readers for men and women. So this is what you do. So, you know, usually you have your readers like this. Yep. You have to put them at the end of your nose, which is very unattractive and makes you feel like you're 80. These tilt.
Nice.
So you can look up and down. And
they're super high-end, too.
And they're very nice. And if you're lying on one side
of the bed, perfect.
You could do this. And for women, or men, too, if you're getting your hair colored.
By the way,
bend both down. This is the most rock.
What's the name of the company?
It's called Bunny Eyes, E-I-E-Z. I'll post pictures of it.
So yeah, it's related to this hinge being opposable.
Yes, and look how high quality that is.
That is awesome.
But they come in all kinds of colors and styles. I am obsessed with these. They've been featured everywhere. But they're like I've known them. They were sorority sisters of mine, Jenny and Stacy Koppelman.
But wait a minute. Koppelman? You mean a Brian Koppelman of billions?
Yeah, there's three.
Oh my God, brilliant people.
Charles Koppelman.
Oh, yeah.
Famous music producer. Yeah. Three kids. So Jenny has a huge show on Sirius XM. You've met her many times. Stacy, my sorority sister, she and Jenny created the Bunny Eyes together. And then Brian Koppelman.
That was totally out of necessity, too. They saw them and their friends probably doing the same thing with their glasses.
Anyway, he created billions. But they said they needed this, and they came up with like a little prototype with a rubber band and a this and a that, and they came up with that. It's very cool.
Love it.
So is there any harm in wearing glasses that are stronger than you really need?
So the way that this works is that it's the inverse of the power is the focal point.
Right.
So a +3 on an emmetropic or a zero-powered eye is going to be close.
Right.
Okay. So that tells me that you do a lot of work on your phone, right? I
operate 12 hours a day, 6 days a week kind of thing. So then
let me ask you this. When was the last time you went to the eye doctor to determine the refractive power of your eye?
I went to the optometrist about a year and a half ago, and there is a difference between my right and left that I noticed, by the way, recently has gotten worse. And she said, look, you can do this or you can just get readers. They'll be close enough.
Multifocal contacts.
I didn't like those.
No?
Mm-mm.
There's lots of new ones that enter the market. And then there's also surgical options now, too.
Really?
Yeah.
So you mean that are non-LASIK type? Like what?
Well, there's inlays that they can put in front of the pupil in the anterior chamber that help you focus up close now.
You mean like it's a permanent contact?
Yeah. You can think of it that way. Yeah.
But what happens is as I get older, my eyes change.
So they also have ones that have variable focal zones on there.
Really?
So it'd be, multifocal.
This is Dr. and Mrs. Guinea Pig with Terry and Heather Dubrow.
I am absolutely in love with my new favorite subscription. If you haven't heard about CauseBox by now, it's a quarterly subscription box curated by women for women that is filled with all sorts of amazing products and brands that have a positive mission to give back and make the world better. The last four boxes sold out within days, which I can believe, because you get over $250 worth of products for less than $50. Every CauseBox is limited edition and comes with 6 to 8 full-size products. You can get everything from skincare to jewelry to homewares and accessories. The amazing thing about CauseBox is that it's not filled with random stuff. They send you quality products that you're going to love and actually use every day. I loved everything in my box, especially the tote bag was so cool. And there was this great little bento box, which separates all your food with a cute little stretchy band around it so nothing falls out, and utensils. Unbelievable. And did you also know that each CauseBox comes with an exclusive magazine that tells the story and the mission behind each product in the box? One of the best parts was just getting my CauseBox in the mail. They ship it to your door for free, and opening it, it feels like you're just getting yourself a fabulous gift. Now more than anything, it was just when I needed this. I would get this for myself, my mom, my sister, my friends. It's going to be your new favorite subscription. I'm loving seeing my listeners getting their CauseBoxes. So if you get one, tag me and let me know your favorite product. I loved the canvas duffel. That, to me, that one was the one to beat, but I really loved everything in it. The best part is that, of course, I got my listeners this exclusive discount. Go to www.causebox.com/Dubrow and use the code Dubrow to get your first box for 30% off. As in, you could get your first box worth over $250 for less than $39 and free shipping. If you haven't gotten your CauseBox yet, go check it out before it sells out. I can tell you firsthand, you are going to love it.
Now, back to Dr. and Mrs. Guinea Pig with Terry and Heather Dubrow.
Wait, before we move off the glasses thing for a second, because I really want to hear about this. I'm sort of fascinated by LASIK and the whole thing, so I have some questions about that. But Terry's asking a lot of questions about where he wants to look, and you're asking him how far he holds things.
Yeah.
What I understood, so I want to know if this is true or not, is that the power of the readers isn't so much what your, quote, prescription is, but it's how close or far you like to hold
it. Combination
things.
Of both.
Combination.
A combination of both.
Okay.
So it really is dependent on the power of your eyes and where you want to get your work done. Now, reading glasses, they're fixed focal point. There's no variable focal point. They do have some on the market, you know, multifocal lenses, progressive addition lenses. Those are multifocal glasses that have a change from the distance prescription through the intermediate, which is computer arm's length, to up close. And then contact lenses follow suit, except contact lenses are concentric rings of power change that you have all of the options presented to your brain at once, and the brain has to figure out where it wants to look.
Some people,
and,
my friend Lisa loves them. I tried it.
So I wear multifocal contacts, and I love them.
And are your eyes the same prescription?
They're different, but the beauty about that is you can totally customize everything versus an off-the-rack solution.
Right.
So when we utilize off-the-rack solutions, there still may be some inherent eye strain left due to the fact that each eyes are working independently, and they may not be working optimally, and they may not be working together as a team.
Okay.
But if it's close, it's close. But if there's a big difference or anisometropia, then there's lots of problems with coordination of eyes teaming together.
Okay. Before, do you have another question?
Yeah. So is it bad? Wait a minute. So is it bad if someone, let's say me, chose like the higher power for the both eyes just so?
Higher power means you just hold things
closer.
Because I
didn't want two different prescriptions.
Nope. The eyes are going to probably focus to the least amount of effort in each eye. So one eye is probably just working a little not as hard as the other one.
Okay.
No big
very
deal.
Good.
So
some people are more sensitive to that, though. And some people can have depth perception issues if eyes aren't working together as a team.
Isn't that crazy? My dad, before the multifocals came out years ago, my dad wore one contact for distance and had no contact so he could read.
Monovision.
Yes.
So monovision. So one eye was doing far, They corrected his far vision, and then the non-dominant eye usually was doing up close.
That's crazy.
So monovision's, before we had multifocal contacts, monovision was what most eye doctors would prescribe. It was great for far, it was great for near, but then they were fighting in the intermediate, and things like driving, where you'd have one blurry headlight and one focused headlight overlapping each other, was a nightmare. Mm. So multifocal contact lenses now, and the advancements that we've seen and the innovations in that marketplace have really led to the best visual outcomes, where people pop them on in the morning, have their eyes like they're 20 years old again, and then just throw them out at the end of the day.
Okay, I want to hear about surgery, because for my thing, I always thought about doing LASIK. Mm-hmm. You're going to think I'm crazy, this story I'm going to tell you, but I'm going to tell you anyway. So I wear contacts for distance, as I said, but I can't read, so I have to wear readers when I have them in, as you can see. But when I take them out, I can read.
Yeah, so you're nearsighted.
So right, so I thought I'm not going to get LASIK because in the apocalypse, I want to be able to read the can if it's for, like, to know if it's food.
Is that a Twilight Zone reference?
Right, exactly. Remember the Twilight Zone where he gets locked in the library and his glasses break and he can't read?
Burgess Meredith, the guy who played the Penguins.
Penguin, yeah.
And on Rocky, he was Rocky's co-trainer.
Awesome. So in the apocalypse, I want to be able to read. I don't care if the zombie's coming. So I was choosing that. However, I just turned 50 and now when I take out my contact lenses, I can start to see shifting happening. Yeah. So if I get to that point where it's really not helping me and I'm going to have to wear contacts and glasses, what are my surgical options?
You've got a few options. Okay. So one option is we can undercorrect the nearsighted eye so you still have a little bit of near vision up close. Right, so kind of like what your dad was doing, except it's a surgical intervention.
Too dizzy for me.
Okay, so if monovision LASIK's not your thing, there are multifocal LASIK surgeries being developed now. I don't know what phase of clinical trials are in, but I do know it's on the horizon. Mm-hmm. And then if you wait a little bit longer, you guys are familiar with cataract surgery, right?
Yeah.
So cataract surgery, typically you take out the cloudy lens and drop in a clear one of the right power and you got great distance vision. But now they're dropping in a multifocal lens. So you have the ability to see at all distances after your cataract surgery.
So when you have cataract surgery, it's like going back to being 25?
Yes.
That, I'm waiting for that.
So now I have people fighting me on wearing their sunglasses saying that I want to get cataracts so I can get the surgery.
That's hilarious.
What about now? I have macular degeneration in my family.
Yeah.
I do not have any signs of macular degeneration.
Great.
But how does that coincide with this kind of surgery?
So macular degeneration is when the central vision area of your eye, the macula, starts to have damage where the photoreceptors are no longer to clear waste products and you see drusen form. That's the early stage or the dry stage. In the later stages or advanced stages, you actually get blood vessels, weak, leaky blood vessels forming in that area of the eye, which really wreaks havoc on the vision and damages the retina. You know, we're lucky that we have injections now, Avastin injections that can help prevent that wet macular degeneration from getting worse or at least try to hold it off. But the whole point is we don't want that to happen. So
sunglasses. Got it.
Making sure that we're not getting UV and blue light damage back there, which free radicals form and ultimately have cumulative damage on the retina. Making sure that you're not smoking. Smoking is a big one, right? Smoking damages pretty much every system in the body.
Yeah.
Which I don't think I've seen anybody have a cigarette out here in California this whole day. So
they vape out here.
They vape out. Yeah. Is that what they're vaping? But even that, now we're seeing the backlash on nicotine is a brain toxin, right?
Right.
So I don't know.
You see, they're raising the age to 21 for nicotine.
Yeah. And then the third thing is you got to have a good diet. So dark green leafy vegetables to help make sure that you have those antioxidants going to help protect the retina. But macular degeneration is definitely a big one. And if you ask me, like, everybody freaks out about glaucoma, right? Everybody's glaucoma this, glaucoma that, and can I smoke this for glaucoma? but it's really macular degeneration which robs you of your central vision, which can you imagine, you know, looking at her and just seeing nothing but a big black hole there?
Yeah.
Like having a black hole in the middle of your vision.
Yeah, it's a loss of your central vision.
What percent of people will get macular degeneration as they get older?
It depends. So you can look at overall statistics or you can break it down into the highest percentage. So female, Caucasian, higher percentage. Lack of pigmentation, which we know pigment is something that helps with scavenging the free radicals in the back of the eye. So if you don't have it, a lot of pigment back there, you're more at risk.
So darker eyes are better?
Darker eyes are better.
Yes.
And we know that the statistics are showing that the rate of macular degeneration is still on the incline. So we need to do a better job of making sure we, anytime we step out of the house, we are protecting our eyes with our shades.
Okay, I'm on it. What about, all right, here's my next biggie. Ready? Floaters.
Floaters. This is great. I actually had an office manager come to my office in New York and tell me that they have implemented laser floater removal surgery.
Yeah.
So typically in the past, if you do a vitrectomy or suck out the gel, that was one way to help people who were really suffering from floaters. That's a kind of a big surgical intervention. So now this laser floater removal is something that just popped up on my horizon. And to be honest, I don't know a lot about it because it's something that's brand new. But if you are suffering from floaters, it seems that there are some emerging innovative technologies out there now.
But what are floaters and how do we get them?
So the inside of your eyeball is not just a hollow sphere. There's a gel in the back called the vitreous. And over time, that vitreous and those proteins can clump up and lump up and they cast shadows. And you see those shadows, especially when it goes over your central vision or your macula, projected out in space. So it's an entopic phenomenon where we're seeing shadows of proteins of the vitreous in our world that interferes with our vision. And when it gets to the point where, let's say you were, you know, a pilot and you couldn't land a plane because those floaters were so bad, that's usually when surgical intervention was necessary. But now if it's something where we can do it with a laser, it would maybe become more commonplace to have the smaller ones or the nuisance ones removed as well.
Interesting.
So, you know, let me ask you, you've mentioned sunglasses when you go out. What are some other key health tips for your eyes as we age and get older? What things you can do to protect your eye?
Routine eye care.
Like,
that's it.
Meaning?
So we understand that we need to get a physical every year.
Right.
Got to say, get a physical for your eye every year.
Okay.
That's it. So making sure that you have regular routine eye care scheduled, you know, get it on the calendar, you know, when you get your physical. Go get your eyes checked. A lot of the conditions, and when I see some of these cases of raging glaucoma, there's no such thing as raging glaucoma. That patient's had it for a decade. They just haven't had their eyes checked since they were at the DMV when they had a vision test done when they were 16, and they show up in my office when they're 43, and they need reading glasses, but they've had glaucoma for a decade.
Wow.
So, you know, we understand that everybody thinks that unless you're seeing 20/20, your eyes are healthy, right? If you can see clearly straight ahead, your eyes are healthy, you don't need to see the eye doctor. That is the biggest myth in eye care. There are so many conditions such as glaucoma that don't present with a decreased in visual acuity until it's end stage. So you want to make sure that every year you go in, get your eyes checked. And it's especially important for kids, too.
That's what I was going to ask. What age? Because I know when we have kids and we go to the pediatrician, they give them a little eye test to look at the picture. There's a boat. There's a this. There's a that. And I can't remember what age I started bringing them, but my kids go every year. But what age is the right year to go to a specialist?
So I volunteer for a program called Infancy. It's an American Optometric Association's initiative that makes sure we screen every kid. Actually, that's not even a screen. It's a comprehensive eye exam for infants between the ages of 6 months and a year. We want to make sure that there's nothing that's going to interfere with their normal visual development and that there's no ocular health issues. So I'm looking for congenital cataracts, congenital glaucoma. I'm looking for damage from them being a preemie baby. I'm making sure their eyes are aligned. I'm making sure that they have the same prescription in each eye and a normal range expected for an infant. We're testing ocular alignment. I just want to make sure that that baby has got a great start to their visual system.
That's awesome. You know, I was thinking about adding laser color change to the eyes to my practice. Have you heard about this craziness?
Yeah. So down in, I believe, South America.
In India,
they zap pigment. So basically your eye color is determined by the level of pigmentation you have in your eye. So if you set an argon laser, I think it's an argon laser, to the right wavelength and you're blasting out some pigment, you can lighten up people's eyes. Now, you're not going to get baby blues from it, but it does change the color.
But you, I mean, think how dangerous that is, how crazy
I mean,
is.
Come on.
How about these lens implants that we're seeing now?
So there have been the surgical implantation of basically a colored contact onto the iris.
Right.
I believe there's been some really bad cases of endophthalmitis related to surgical complications. Inflammatory conditions because there's now a foreign object in the eye that may or may not have been properly handled. I'm not sure. In the U.S., we don't deal with that. I don't know anybody who's actually doing that type of surgery here in the U.S. If you want to change your eye color, come in. We'll get colored contacts.
Exactly right.
I've got
no one's doing it
once.
Here.
It was really ugly on me. Do you wear daily disposables?
Absolutely.
Okay, do you know I just found out recently, I've been wearing contacts since I was 16, and I just found out recently that you can't put them down the sink.
Yeah, so if you want to eat contact lenses, anytime you grab a glass of tap water, go ahead and continue to put them in the toilet. As you're brushing your teeth, you take them out and you just throw them in the toilet or just put them in the sink because that's where they end up. And they are, they're hard to process out. So there's a couple of companies around the world that have started recycling programs. In the U.S., Bausch & Lomb has started a one-by-one recycling program. Yeah. So if you go to BauschRecycles.com, you'll be given a free shipping label to send your annual contact lens waste materials back to a specialized recycling company called TerraCycle. They'll break it down in the raw materials, and they'll use raw materials to build jungle gyms for kids in need and things
That's
like that.
That's so cool. I'm going to do that.
So it's the contact lens itself.
Okay.
The plastic and the foil. Now, you may think, like, all right, we live in a community that recycles the heck out of everything. I got five boxes, compost pile, everything. They're too small. The blister packs are below the 2-inch by 2-inch minimum that a lot of local municipalities have.
Uh-huh.
So you have to send them to a special recycling facility like the one Bausch & Lomb does with TerraCycle.
Are most contacts...
And it's for any contact lens. It doesn't have to be a Bausch & Lomb contact lens. It can be any contact lens.
Are most contacts daily? I don't know this. Are they mostly daily? Because when I first started wearing them, they were monthly.
They started out as yearly. So you take this sponge, because it needs to be spongy because it needs to stay
wet,
moist and hydrated. And then you keep it for a year. So all the proteins, when they denature, they turn into barbed wires that adhere to the contact. And no matter how you rub, scrub, bake, boil, or disinfect, those proteins are still there. And they're inflammatory in nature. So this was I don't know why it took so long for this study to come out, but recently there was a study that's saying that the longer you keep a contact lens, no matter what you do to take care of it, it's going to be more inflammatory on the eye. That was like the DUS study. We already knew this. So a daily disposable.
Right, because there's stuff in your eye. Yeah. You're touching it with your fingers. They're not,
a daily disposable
clean like
is
that.
The safest, most convenient, most hygienic, healthiest, and often most comfortable way to wear a contact lens.
Mm.
So daily disposable first. I don't think that you're going to find an eye doctor on the planet that would argue against the daily disposable.
What about sleeping with contact lenses?
So I'm going to tell you a personal story. My senior, it wasn't a thesis. It was a senior class presentation that we had to do on contact lenses, and mine was on extended wear contact lenses, 28-day extended wear contact lenses. We thought we cracked the code for extended wear when we got the oxygen transmission levels up to, I think this was 156 DK over T units. So basically it was a super breathable contact that was basically like wearing nothing, right? So if I had nothing on, I had natural levels of oxygen, life should be good for my corneas.
You should sleep it up. No big deal.
No problem.
Yeah.
So in a closed eye state, you don't get the transmission of oxygen from the environment. It comes from the blood vessels on the back of the eyelid. And this was still at a high enough level where oxygen transmission could take place and normal corneal metabolism could occur. What we failed to realize is that when you wear that contact lens and all of the New York City grime and gunk and proteins from your tear film are now in a closed eye state and you're not blinking or having the tears being removed, constantly removed, you're going to cause inflammation. And once you have inflammation in the eye, it opens up the pathway to infections.
Mm.
So I ended up with two peripheral corneal ulcers about 2 weeks after I gave great presentation about how extended wear is the best thing ever. And my eyes have never been the same. So
isn't that crazy?
We stopped. So it's about an 8-time greater risk of an adverse event happening if you're sleeping in a contact lens, no matter how breathable it is.
No, I used to sleep in them all the time, and I got a corneal ulcer because I got makeup underneath one of them. It was one of the most painful.
Yep.
You had two?
Two. Same time.
It was one
Same eye.
One of the most painful things ever, but I caught it very quickly and it was very small, so I didn't have any scarring or damage from it.
Yeah.
But from that day on, even though I still had the extended wear, which probably was because we didn't have the daily wear yet, but I would take them out every night.
Smart.
Yeah, that's why. What about dry eyes? Because dry eyes, I recently have been hearing about a lot of new dry eye products.
Tons of new products that hit the market. So dry eye is multifactorial. There's lots of genetic components to it. There's lots of environmental components to it. There's lots of ocular health components to it. The reason that you're seeing so many new dry eye care products hit the market market is because dry eye is a pain in the butt. If you can't concentrate on what you're getting done because your eyes are driving you crazy, it's a huge issue.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that people don't want to just be doing drops every hour. We need a better solution. So in the past, we've had a minor in-office surgical implant, a little punctal plug, which is dropping a little piece of silicone into the drainage ducts. We've had medications such as Xiidra and Restasis that help produce better tears. We've always had artificial tears. But now we're seeing the ability to help treat the glands that produce the oil. So the oil is the stabilization of the tear film. And when you have de-wetting or instability in the tear film, the ocular surface is exposed, and that's when we start to feel symptoms of dry eye. That's when we start to see corneal damage. That's when we start to see inflammation. That's when we start to see a slippery slope or a cascade of problems occur. So if you can help provide rehabilitation to the meibomian glands or the oil glands, you're going to have a better tear film, and you're going to help prevent the damage from occurring in dry eye disease. So new therapies have definitely been developed on the market now. There's TearCare, mm-hmm. There's LipiFlow, there's MiboFlow. There's lots of devices out there that are being developed to help people with their oil glands, basically.
That's so good, because back in the day, it was either natural tears, or remember there was that real viscous one?
Cellulose.
Yes, yeah. And you'd put it on, you'd feel like you were looking through Vaseline. Yeah. It was bad.
Not good.
It was... It wasn't dry.
Yeah, that's true.
So, top three favorite restaurants in New York City. Go.
Go.
Wait,
you're in Brooklyn or the Bronx?
I'm in Brooklyn.
Okay.
But we know that
I don't play favorites. It depends what I'm in the mood for. I can go for Ethiopian food. What's my favorite Ethiopian restaurant?
Okay.
You know, I can tell
fair
you
enough.
Like that.
But like if someone you knew was flying into Manhattan.
All right. So yeah. I'm a big fan. If I was taking somebody out, I like Per Se. Per Se is always up there.
He doesn't like French food, but
okay. Well, then you're gonna hate my second choice too, La Bernardin.
Again, you won't
is
go
that,
there.
Is that in the Trump Plaza?
No, you're thinking of the Jean Georges restaurant.
That's right. And then honestly, I'm gonna grab a New York slice at my local tomato and basil pizza joint. Is my third one.
Of course.
Yeah.
Do you like Il Molino?
I have Il Molino in Park Slope.
No, the one downtown.
I haven't been.
But there's two downtown. You gotta go to the original one.
Quality Meats.
I like Quality Meats.
Quality Meats.
Yeah. We like Quality Meats.
Good. But New York's great because when I tell people to come to New York, I'm telling them to look up the New York hot heat sink restaurants or whatever. They do it like new restaurants.
What's heat sink?
I think it's called heat sink. I don't know what it is.
Oh, I need to
tell you what's hot at the moment.
What's hot at the moment?
Mm.
I follow Bucket List. Do you ever look at Bucket List?
Don't.
There's like Bucket List New York, Bucket List LA, and it'll tell you like the coolest, newest places to go.
It's probably very something similar. It's the heat map of restaurants. I forget what it's called exactly.
Wow.
But it'll show you over the last 3 months, like what restaurants are going to come up.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so thank you so much for being here.
This was a pleasure.
So eye-opening. No pun intended.
Incredibly informative.
So I know you guys got great eye doctors, but if your listeners don't have a great eye doctor out there.
How does everyone find you?
There's two things. ThinkAboutYourEyes.com or the Vision Council. .org. So thinkaboutyoureyes.com has a doctor locator. And if you want more information about the topics we were talking about today, thevisioncouncil.org is a great website to go to.
And how do people find you?
Just Google Dr. Justin Bazan.
There you go. It's Bazan.
You got it.
Thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me today.
Thank you.
This was great.
Thank you guys so much for listening. This was super fun. And a lot of really more interesting guests coming up in the weeks to come.
Really?
So, yeah, stay tuned. You're going to love next week's guest. I'm gonna tease you with it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't know who it is. This one was one of my favorites.
Me too.
Though.
Loved having Justin here. Thank you guys so much, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Dr. and Mrs. Guinea Pig with Terry and Heather Dubrow. Download new episodes every week on the Podcast One app, iTunes, or at podcast1.com.